Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Up here on the stage at Ellis Island, front yard on the stage, because they have another stage, karaoke. We have to get you in for karaoke. I bet you can sing. It's always the sleepers. You don't know. I'll tell you who I didn't know could sing. And I went on a road trip with him, as I do often, because he's on the broadcast crew for UNLV and former Rebel quarterback, Caleb Herring. He's a good singer.
All right.
Like, I like doing karaoke. I'm not good at all. I butcher songs, but I don't care. And Caleb, we'll have to bring this up to him. He'll be shy about it, but he did John Legend in Memphis, so like a real music city. It was like, because this place here, this is one of the best karaoke rooms in really the country, but in Las Vegas in particular, because we have so many entertainers here, you'll get the high-level entertainers go in there, and then you'll sign up, and then you're following someone who's like, oh, they just did Whitney Houston. Like, they're better than Whitney. Like, what the hell just happened? I got to follow doing my stupid song. But yeah, in Memphis, I mean, that's a music city. Caleb went up and he killed it. So that is part of the redesign here. Eventually, they're going to get to the karaoke room. You got to see what they've done down here, folks. If you haven't been to Ellis Island, it is crazy. First of all, we're in like phase one that started 5 years ago. It's been open for years. The front yard is freaking awesome, and the menu. What'd you get last week? You get a burger?
Oh, I got the bacon burger last week. It was phenomenal. And I will tell you, since I'm with you these next few Mondays and I'm still without ESPN, thank you YouTube TV and Disney again, I will be here the whole game yet again.
Are you going to continue on the bacon theme? Because I told you, asked me about the bacon, you're like, yeah, you said the bacon's good, and I'm like, yeah, they have so much bacon that they serve here that they've got a special deal on bacon. Their bacon is ridiculous.
So tonight, I haven't decided yet, but that bacon mac and cheese sounds pretty darn good. That sounds pretty darn good.
I might take a spoonful if you get that. We're doing a show together. Of course, I get to share food with you. I had terrible mac and cheese on the road. A barbecue place had catered some of the food at CSU Stadium, and the food was pretty good, but the mac and cheese, yikes, not good. The unlimited food menu here, and they've got unlimited beer menu, unlimited spirits menu. The unlimited food menu includes 5 breakfast items, multiple salads, but come on, who's doing salads unless you need to roughage to clear you out? The main dishes, you can get smoked brisket sandwich, Cajun chicken sandwich, pulled pork sandwich, drive-in burger, meatball grinder, Tony's rigatoni, 2 different pizzas, the onion rings are dynamite, they've got great dessert, so you want to come down for that, and we'll be giving away 2 of those all-you-can-eat packages for a future football viewing experience here in the front yard at Ellis Island. Let's finish up on some college football before we get to the big news of yesterday. Some blowout victories, some shocking losses. We were just talking college football and how wild the situation is. I know what you're saying when you made the declaration that outside of Texas Tech, it doesn't look like there's anyone outside the SEC and the Big Ten, Notre Dame, but who can win the national title. And part of it is the perception of a conference like the ACC, which, because Miami, Clemson, and Florida State are the biggest brands, when 2 of them are mediocre and then 1 is a little underwhelming, it looks like the conference doesn't have anyone who can really play. I'm not saying these teams are going to run to a national title, but I will take up for conference balance can also be fun. It sucks for the conference image, the optics, because everyone's like, the conference sucks. It doesn't suck. They actually have a lot of 7, 8, 9 win teams. They just don't have a super team, Jeff.
That's true.
I don't know how you're supposed to answer that. I'm defending balance over what we're seeing in the Big Ten, which is now you've got 3 teams we think have separated themselves, although IU and Oregon had a tough time this week. But you've got a bottom of the Big Ten that, until Rutgers took out Maryland, right, and got its second Big Ten win, at the bottom of the conference, which included Maryland and Rutgers, those teams had combined going into this weekend to go 1-27.
Yeah.
So the bottom of a conference needs to suck ass for the top to shine and for us to go, good year in the Big Ten.
Well, and then but then on the other hand, though, in the SEC, pretty much, look, Mississippi State, even though they got pummeled by Georgia this week, like, they should have beat Tennessee earlier in the year. They had Florida. Like,
if we size up the bottom of the SEC, who has been dangerous and pulling any upsets?
Well,
like Florida and South Carolina have been totally
underwhelming. Auburn has perfected losing by seven to everybody.
I mean, Auburn's been in games. Obviously, Arkansas is not. You get what I'm saying? Like,
no,
to
have
four really good teams at the top of a conference, that means the bottom has to be really bad. And I really thought that the bottom of the Big Ten would rise up, but they've had coaching situations. You've got multiple guys who are on the hot seat. Well, Wisconsin, I don't know that game should save
it. Shouldn't.
His Fickell's job at Wisconsin. It didn't matter before the game. They made a commitment to him and said they're going to throw more money at the problem. Maryland looks like they're annoyed and kind of fed up with Loxley. It's been a mess at the bottom of the Big Ten and the SEC.
So just going back to the ACC for a second then, and this is my big point of contention right now, and it kind of goes back to last year as well, where SMU was completely non-competitive against Penn State. Clemson was competitive enough as a team that probably shouldn't have been there against Texas, even though they didn't cover with that game last year. And now I'm blanking on what that number was. But here's the biggest issue for the ACC right now. The Duke Blue Devils, who are 5-4 right now and just lost to mighty UConn on the road. By the way, I realized this earlier when we were talking to Steve Kim and about Jim Mora earlier. You know, UConn, all three of their losses were in overtime. like, maybe that team deserves more respect, but still, Duke is 5-4, and Duke has lost to Tulane, who is a team that is fighting for a college football playoff berth out of the American. They got blasted by Illinois, who is an average Big Ten team, despite what the pollsters thought in the beginning of the year. And they lost to Georgia Tech, who I think, again, that NC State loss notwithstanding, is the best team in the ACC. But Duke has Virginia at home, where we don't know the status of Chad Morris. At North Carolina, I don't care that North Carolina's won two straight games. They stink. And Wake Forest, who has been an overachiever this year because Jake Dickert is a really good football coach. If Duke wins all three of those games, which I think they will, they probably will go to the ACC championship game at 8-4 and 7-1 in the ACC. Where if they play anyone that isn't Georgia Tech in that game, boy, they're 9-4, especially if Tulane wins the American Athletic, which is possible, and James Madison wins the Sun Belt at 12-1. The committee's got a decision on their hands what to do with a 9-4 Duke team against an 11-2 Tulane team that won heads up against Duke, and a James Madison team that is 12-1, where their only loss would have been a competitive loss against Louisville earlier in the
year. Decision do you think they'll make?
I think they would put Duke in over James Madison, and Tulane would get in as a higher seed than Duke. That's what I think would happen. I think Duke would be the 12 and Tulane would be the 11 in that circumstance.
NFL, Brian Daboll is out of a job. You made the point earlier in the show that this isn't the greatest move for Jackson Dart.
Nope.
Like, why not just keep it together? I never... listen, I'm not in the locker room, so maybe there's a mutiny on hand. But, like, who would you listen to where you're like, you know what, you're right, you're mad. Like, what, the defense? Right? Like, you're right, fellas, we got to listen to you about Brian Daboll. Unless there's, like, some horrific story, he probably should have just stayed around.
Sure.
You can whisper it behind the scenes, but, like, hey, if we don't win any more games because Daboll stinks as a coach, that's okay. Right? It's not the worst thing for draft picks. But I do understand when, and I'll trust these numbers as accurate, against the Cowboys, the Broncos, and the Bears, the Giants had fourth quarter win probability of 92.3%, 99.3%, and 96.9%. They lost all three of them, and those odds of that happening in three games is pretty low. The odds, yes.
One in 60,000 is pretty good.
Again, if I trust this person and where they got the numbers from. But the bottom line is they blew three games. I'm sure that has irked the hell out of Giants management, Giants ownership. I don't know about Shane. Cowboys, Broncos, Bears. They could have won all those games.
Well, and I will say the only other thing, though, and I brought this up earlier in the show, like Jackson Dart finally suffers a concussion after being in concussion protocol four times this year also. So I know, like, again, it's a young player trying to make his place in the league and such, but you would have hoped at some point that the coach would have at least changed, at least got it through Dart's head of, hey, like, you can't be taking contact like Josh Allen. Josh Allen is a once-in-a-lifetime player with the brutality he could take. Also, Josh Allen is 6'7", and Jackson Dart 6'3". So, yeah, look, like I said earlier in the show, I don't love the idea of firing a coach when the rookie quarterback has looked as good as he has so far. But I think the way you've been blowing these games, I mean, if you win those three games, you're in it. You're legitimately in it. You're 5-5. You're in it for a wild card in the NFC. Even though, again, last week I declared that the NFC was done with the current seven teams that was in. But you're technically still in it at 5-5 if you win those three games where you're plus 90% of them in the fourth quarter.
Damn, I had a bet head-to-head against a buddy who would win more games this year, Giants or Cowboys. Dable cost me it. You're right, fire him.
No. You know what? I don't think you're done in that. I think the Cowboys are going to completely implode down the stretch here.
Why?
Because even with the addition of Quinnen Williams, the defense is still a disaster. And again, how much can Dak Prescott take of playing as well as that offense has played, and they looking up and having no chance at some of these games because of that defense?
I was going to say something off the bloom. I don't know how to say it. So I'm skipping that one. Colts.
Ooh.
In Berlin.
Escape job.
Johnny Taylor, ridiculous. Just ridiculous. But Daniel Jones.
Starting to see the cracks.
Okay, not great. Yeah.
Yeah, you know.
Falcons aren't bad. Falcons are good on defense. They weren't good against Johnny Taylor. But Colts escape.
Boy, 8-2. Going into the bye. No one imagined. I mean, they're over the win total already. But Jonathan Taylor, you know, as a proud a fantasy team owner with Jonathan Taylor on the roster, who, by the way, I had Gibbs and Taylor, and I only won by 15 yesterday. Shows how good the rest of my team is, Cofield. No one cares about my fantasy team anyway. But, you know, for Indy, it's the cracks are there the last 2 weeks of the blueprint of how this team will fall off. Daniel Jones turning the ball over. The 5-turnover game against Pittsburgh, where their defense had stunk the rest of the year except for that game. And then 2 big turnovers that ended up not costing them in Atlanta because the Falcons just find ways to lose games. By the way, also, the weird thing with that game, Indy doubled Atlanta in yardage and still needed overtime to win the game. Just shows how big turnovers are. But, boy, the cracks are starting to show. And the biggest result for Indy even not winning, how about Jacksonville? We mentioned it earlier in the show. Jacksonville choking that game away against Houston yesterday.
Disaster. 8-2 teams.
Yep.
You know, and I mentioned last hour, the NFL does a wonderful job of making the best teams from the year before play each other. And teams in the middle, the prior year, the bottom, they get easier schedules. And I think that's part of this. But the Colts, the Patriots, and the Broncos are 8-2. We should give kudos to one of the only Patriot backers, like aggressive Patriot backers that I heard in the offseason outside of New England. Someone told me they thought the Pats would win over 10.5.
Woo!
That was
looks
John. That was John Von Tobel.
Looks pretty good right now.
8-2. Colts, Broncos, Patriots. Which of those teams are you most confident will win a playoff game?
You know, it's kind of funny. The team that I think gets the one seed will be least likely to win a playoff game because I think they're going to get matched up with either Kansas City or Baltimore in that first playoff game after the bye, which is funny because I think New England is the best of the three of those teams, but their schedule is such a joke down the stretch that I think New England is going to get the one seed. So if I'm answering the question of which team do I think is most likely to win a playoff game, I'm going with Indianapolis because I think they're not going to get the one, and I think they'll get the easiest round one matchup. I think the Broncos are completely fraudulent. I think Nix is no better than he was by the end of last year. I think that defense is really good, but they can get cracked by good offenses, as we've seen so far this year. I think New England's the best of the bunch, but I trust Indy the most to win the playoff game. Win a playoff game because I think they'll have the easiest draw of the three teams.
That was a good answer.
Yeah,
I hadn't thought about the number one seed that they could get a hellacious matchup after the bye, and not win a game.
And it's funny because Cofield, I think New England's winning the East at this point. You got a game and a half. You're two games clear of Buffalo with the tiebreak, and Buffalo has to go to Foxborough again. I think New England's winning the East or getting the one seed at this point. That's, again, why I had the answer that I had there.
In the NFC, who's better, Seahawks or Rams?
How about another convoluted answer for you? At the moment, the Seahawks are better, but the Rams will end up being better long term. And there's one reason and one reason only. Matthew Stafford is better than Sam Darnold. And even though I love McDonald and Clint Kubiak has done an outrageously good job calling that offense, I still trust Sean McVay more than anyone on that coaching staff. So I'm going to take the team with the better coach and a better quarterback long term. By the way, even though the game's in L.A., I like Seattle this week. I think Seattle's going to win that game. But in the end, I trust the team with the better quarterback and the better coach. So I'll take long-term L.A.
I need to do a really dopey crossover, college and the NFL.
Please.
We're all paid to have hot takes to certain degrees. I'm not paid to overreact, and I try all I can to not overreact. What was the dumber story that was covered or blown up August into September? Kalen DeBoer can't coach, or Matt Stafford's back injury? Do you remember all the attention that was paid to Matt Stafford and his back injury? And the guy, he is playing at an MVP level. He's been awesome. I was watching him yesterday just throw dimes all over the place in arm, you know, that's 19 years old on whatever he is, 37-year-old. What back injury did he have? Was that fake? Was that just like an excuse to keep him out of the preseason? Why they would need an excuse, I don't know. They're both equally dumb.
Oh, my goodness.
Kalen DeBoer can't coach. And what was the goober coming straight out of the trailer who's like, well, you got to get – it was a lady, actually.
If you win the lottery, what are you going to do? I'm going to go right to Tuscaloosa and buy out Kalen DeBoer, one of the best clubs of the whole year.
Unreal.
You know, it's funny, and I'm going to say this because I never bought the Kalen DeBoer nonsense. Like, just look at what he's done. I mean, he had Washington a step away from a national championship. Like that was all nonsense. But I, like a dope, bought the Matthew Stafford back thing. I was fully prepared to say the Rams are going to win the Super Bowl this year, load up on him, and talking with a friend of mine who's really well-connected, I'm like, hey, like, is this Stafford thing real? And not to throw my buddy under the bus, he's like, you know what? No one really knows, but I think it is since it's been so loud. And here we are where Matthew Stafford could win the MVP, the Rams could get the one seed in the NFC, and could win another Super Bowl with this group. So I'm going with the Stafford one as the more overblown one, just because it impacted me more than the DeBoer can't coach nonsense.
Listen, we've got modern medicine has stumbled on something that allows us big tubs to lose weight.
Yep.
What have they come up with for a bad back? Because anyone who has a bad back needs what Matt Stafford's getting.
Oh, yeah. Well, usually, back in the day, it was what? Kobe Bryant went to Germany, right, to get healed quicker?
The blood spinning. Yeah. They did something. I mean, I can't go on enough about how good Matt Stafford's been. We're going to get into the MVP race where Drake May is the leader here at Boomer Sportsbook. Caleb Herring is going to come up, recap the UNLV football weekend. Also, look ahead to what the rest of the Mountain West Conference could be. And then we'll get into some NFL storylines as game is kicked off. 2.5 minutes in, scoreless game. Great game. Starting to fill up pretty good here. A lot of Packers fans. Where are the Eagles fans? Come on now. Cheeseheads are all over the place. Oh, ooh, is that a table with a – ooh, that, okay. I thought he's got the – I'm terrible with colors. Is that – would you describe that one? Mark McMillan talks about the Kelly Green.
Yeah, we got Kelly Green, Jalen Hurts jersey, which is the best Philadelphia Eagles jersey.
It is pretty good. We got two Eagles fans. I thought it was an Eagles and a Packers fan couple. But they're here. Packers are well represented. Oh, there's a Reggie White. That's Eagles Reggie White in the back, I think, right? Or is that Green Bay? See my colors?
No, that's an Eagle 92.
Okay, so I got that. But we got fans down here. come on down. This is a great spot. It's a beautiful night. The roof is open. Easy access on Koval. I came down. It didn't take long at all as F1 is being set up. It's a front yard, Ellis Island. We got great prizes. We're all set up here with ESPN Las Vegas. On the way back, some hardcore football talk with Caleb Herring. Hey.
Former UNLV quarterback and current voice of the Rebels, Caleb Herring, joins Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's bring in our Monday football expert, the former Rebel quarterback, part of the broadcast team for UNLV. Caleb Herring is up with Jeff Parles and Cofield. Caleb? What's up, buddy?
What's up, Steve? How's it going?
How was that mac and cheese at the stadium in Colorado State?
I was lacking, I'll say. Yeah. I think the overall spread was good, kind of covered up for it. You mix it in with the beans a little bit. You get the real barbecue sense. But I could have passed on the mac and cheese in hindsight.
It's free food. I appreciate it. Thank you, CSU. I did go on a rant earlier, and you were not victim to this. And maybe you have thoughts from your playing career. I never got on my final sideline report where I really wanted to rant about live animals on the sideline. I don't like that Cam the Ram thing. I don't like the urinating on the field. I feel like it could run amok and like just butt me. That Falcon in Air Force is majestic, so I deal with that one, but I know it could also rip my face off. How do you feel about live animals on the sidelines?
I feel the same way. I feel this way about live animals in public spaces in general, and I don't like the idea of doing it.
What about a nice fluffy dog at a restaurant?
Absolutely not. That is probably the worst thing that I encounter in my public life, and I think we actually encountered it several times at Colorado. I don't like animals in public spaces, and I love animals in general, but there's spaces that are for people, and there's spaces that are for sports. I'm surprised, actually, with the sports venue thing, that there isn't more incident of ravenous or rambunctious animals that happens, especially when you think about the bigger, like, cattle that, like, Texas has or Colorado. Like, I'm surprised there is. I mean, we've seen the wagon for Oklahoma and the Sooners kind of tip over. I think animals are responsible for that. So I think it's strange that we haven't had more incidents, though. But no, I'm with you. I don't agree with having livestock on the sideline during games.
Who are the animals on defense for UNLV? That was probably their best four-quarter run as a defense in terms of consistency.
I would say Blessing Aluwalu Tuiyelamotu probably what stands out the most. I think it's his best performance as a Rebel on the defensive side so far. His energy, his speed. He made 10 tackles, which is leading the team over the weekend. You got to give credit to the defensive line as well. They came up with, I think, ended with 3 sacks total. They didn't credit them with all of them because the quarterback got back to the line of scrimmage, but they were in the backfield in critical times, especially going into the halftime locker room with Rudolph getting his first sack of the season. So I think those guys up front deserve a lot of credit, but individually, I think Blessing probably had the most impactful game as a Rebel in the linebacking core.
How did the offense get Jet Thomas going, and especially dealing with the blitz?
The first thing they did was hand it to him off the left side. I think they found success off the left side with Will Thomas probably having his best game. I don't know the PFF rating for him, but he probably had his best game, at least in the rushing attack, where he was washing down that left end, and they were pulling Alani McAhaley around to lead the way. And I think that combination just worked well, whether it was the matchups, or going into the boundary on that left side. I think that was something that you can attribute to the offensive line, obviously, in that left side, like I mentioned, of clearing the way for them. But then also, I think UNLV did some things differently formationally and with the use of motions pre-snap because of all the pressure that Colorado State was bringing. When UNLV flipped the strength of the formation, they did it multiple times using motions and shifts. When they flipped the strength of the formation, I think they found and exploited a weakness on that boundary side. And I think that was really the key for both of Jet's big 50-plus yard runs to let him really get loose. And again, I think Coach Mullen mentioned it in the postgame. Anytime you have a team that blitzes, you can sting them in the pass, but also in the run. If you get past that first wave of blitzers, if there's 7-8 guys near the line of scrimmage, there's plenty of daylight on the other side of that pressure. For the ground game to get going, too. And I think that's what happened with Jet last weekend.
Rebels have everything in front of them, Caleb Herring, and Caleb's up on ESPN Las Vegas. Two home games, too, which should be fascinating to see if the hometown fans are going to come out and fill more of Allegiant Stadium, especially in that game against Hawaii. But fan support would be monstrous down the stretch, as the Rebels are having a good year at 7-2.
They're having a great year. 7-2 is a fantastic year by anybody's standards. I know the expectations around Las Vegas have been, you know, Mountain West Championship or bust almost. Even CFP or bust for some people based on Dan Mullen and his recruiting. But to be 7-2 with three games in front of you, getting to double-digit wins, still a possibility. Two rivalry games to finish the year, one at home, one on the road. I think there's plenty of reason for Rebel fans to still come out and support. I'm going to do something. I shouldn't have to do it. But I'm going to do something here. I'm going to give a plea. I'm going to give my plea to Rebel Nation. I would love to see for the final two games at Allegiant Stadium for both to crack 40,000. And I know that that might be asking for a lot, but considering that this is these are the last two opportunities to see this 7-2, potentially 10-2 ball club in the 2025 season, I think it's reasonable to say, hey, let's get out there and do it. One of the games is on a Friday. So let's get out there and do it. Utah State's a really good team. I know you mentioned Hawaii and the Golden Pineapple game. That's a rivalry. I'm sure fans will turn out for that, as they usually do. But Utah State is no joke. I think they could put up points. They're going to need, you know, he's going to need the home crowd advantage to make sure they come away with a W. I would like to see 40,000 for the last two home games at Allegiant Stadium. I don't know if that's asking too much of Rebel fans, but I think it's well within the realm of possibility, and I think the boys deserve it after a 7-2 start, or at least seeing if they could finish with double-digit wins.
On the attendance subject, did you get wind of the graphic that Albuquerque Journal's Jeff Grammer put out about 25 versus 24 attendance? It's got people very, very angry because he used tickets out. That's the way you have to kind of track this thing, because you're not going to do a head count at the stadium. But New Mexico has been kicking booty. They're up like 45%. You know, interestingly enough, there were four teams where attendance was down. Boise fans are all mad because their stadium actually got cut down in terms of capacity, so they're down by 10%. UNLV's attendance in a 7-2 season is actually down 6.3%.
I did see that graphic, and I thought that was interesting. I think UNLV got some help last season to kind of spike those numbers with some major games at home early in the season. I think Syracuse was a game that performed well or over expectations. So I think that did help. I also think, if I remember, I could be going 2 years back, but Boise State at home was a big game in the recent years for the attendance mark to get kind of bumped up. So maybe that has something to do with it. And then you got a team like Idaho State, I think in week one this year, where not really many people turned out. So maybe hurting the average. The back end of the schedule, like I said, with Utah State coming to town, a decent team, a quality opponent, and Hawaii being a rival at home, I think should kind of help the average on the season go up. And maybe that's a little bit why I'm begging for 40,000 to show up, so that attendance average hits up. But it is good to see the average attendance over 30,000 for the year. I know it's a decrease from last year, but just to be in that range feels good. There was a time when even that seemed like an unrealistic expectation. So overall, over the past 5 years, I think UNLV attendance is trending upward.
Hardest question to answer of the season. Who's the favorite of the Mountain West Conference now?
I just, based off of what they've done lately, I would say you have to give the nod to Hawaii. And I say that just because, you know, San Diego State, in the fashion that they won based on San Diego State's ranking going into that game, in terms of the conference power rankings, I think you'd say Hawaii for now. That is probably going to change after this weekend. And I do think that UNLV put their name back in the hat with the best defensive performance quarter to quarter or first to fourth quarter, like you mentioned. I think that answer being given for UNLV, if their defense can play that way for the rest of the year, I think UNLV should have their name in that hat as well. New Mexico, unexpectedly, is right there in the mix as well. Basically, what I'm getting at is anybody's conference at this point. There's about five teams that have a legit shot to be in the championship and potentially win the thing. So carnage in the Mountain West. November is going to be crazy. A lot of these teams still have to face each other. I know Hawaii and UNLV will be a big one. But I would say right now, out of respect to the Rainbow Warriors and what they've done this year, I think they have to be considered the top of the conference expectations, at least for this week.
It's been a lot of good photos, pictures at UNLV games. that have hit social media. Two of the best this weekend were Dan Mullen looking really pissed in his ski hat. He was at the time screaming at the officials. So Meanie Mullen made his debut in the ski cap. The other one was a CSU cheerleader looking happy as a clam, taking a picture with a bunch of UNLV players, including Anthony Calandria. What do you think was happening?
I mean, I could go a lot of ways with this. I think based on kind of Anthony Calandria trolling the cheerleaders at Wyoming earlier this year, I could easily say that this is Calandria kind of trolling CSU fans that may have been heckling him and, you know, getting that candid shot with the cheerleader. I could say also that there may be some relationship there that Calandria has been keeping a secret, that he does know that cheerleader, whether it's a family friend, a girlfriend, ex, I don't know. But I tell you what, you know who does know, and I'm pretty sure we'll try to get the answer out of him on Thursday night. Dan Mullen, I'm sure, has the scoop on what exactly was going on. That'd be an interesting discussion during the coaches show. So maybe we just need to stay tuned for that on Thursday night. I'm sure if he knows anything, he'll be willing to divulge it. But this is not the first time Calandria's been mixing it up with the opponent's cheerleaders. And he went viral for one against Wyoming. So I wouldn't be surprised by anything at this point.
He's not well-liked by opposing fans from my more than a bird's eye view on the sideline. He had a couple of real good celebrations on his touchdown runs. And I just heard someone yelling in the bowels of the stadium following the game as cheerleaders were running by the locker room. And I just heard someone make a request, hey, have Haley reach out to me. So I don't know if Haley was the one in the picture, Haley someone else. I'm not saying that Calandria said have Haley reach out to me, but it was all stuff that was going on and observed as I do my job as a sideline guy.
Yeah, that's your job, to get the gossip, I guess, on the sideline if it happens. But that is Calandria for you. He's a showman through and through. The celebrations, the swagger on the field, and apparently it transitions off the field into the tunnels and into the cheerleading sideline. So we've got to get the scoop, Steve. I think this is your mission for the next away game, which isn't until Reno. I think your mission is to really document that interaction between Calandria and opposing fans.
I don't think any of that's going to happen, because I got to tell you, the cheerleaders from CSU, and I think it's the situation, they actually were really good sports after the game, and they were like, good game, guys. Like, I was like, okay. Because a lot of times the cheerleaders get, you know, they get into the games, they're like crying after the game. The Reno cheerleaders are not going to be friendly. If Calandria cracks that, whatever ceiling, wall, that'll be amazing. That, man, I don't see that happening. If he's the magic man. If that's the case. Speaking of that, by the way, there is a UNLV-connected quarterback who could have a very outside shot at the Heisman. And while Calandria is a top 20 PFF guy, do you want to make a case for USC closing out in strong fashion and Jaden Maiava maybe not getting the attention he deserves?
Listen, I think Jaden Maiava has had a fantastic season. I think one of the biggest issues he had when he was at UNLV as a young quarterback was protecting the ball, careless turnovers. I think he's kind of nipped that in the butt in terms of throwing interceptions. And even when he does throw interceptions, like this past week he threw an interception, he makes the play to make up for it by tackling and forcing a fumble out of the end zone for a touchback. So the offense got the ball right back. It's a crazy sequence. But his efficiency as a passer, the touchdown passes to interception ratio, and the fact that USC is relevant, I think they have a legit chance with the schedule still in front of them to be a playoff team. And that would be crazy to think of, because nobody saw that coming early in the season. But if he continues to win at USC and he gets them in position, I don't know if a championship for the Big Ten is out of the realm of possibility. But if they're potentially an at-large team for the college football playoff, I don't see any reason why he wouldn't, as one of the top quarterbacks in the country from an efficiency standpoint, get an invite to New York at least. I think he's definitely climbed up some draft boards for the NFL scouts with his size, his frame, and his arm strength. But based on his success and the ability to win this year, I think he's definitely somebody that I would consider a dark horse for the Heisman ceremony.
Caleb, just looking at the non-power conference bid that will have to go to the college football playoff, who do you think that team's going to be at the current moment, since there's a lot of tight races going on?
My goodness. Between the American and the Mountain West, I think there's a couple of teams that I think could get it, but I think North Texas has the easiest path in terms of their record that they can finish with. Right now they're 8-1 overall, 4-1 in the American. They've got the easiest schedule left of those American Conference contenders. I think Navy and South Florida still have to match up against each other to finish the year. Tulane's already knocked off Memphis, but Memphis is still definitely right there in the thick of things. It may end up being, which was not the prediction before, that the group of six representative is going to be a two-loss team. And if that's the case, if everybody has two losses, even UNLV is still in the mix. And I think if UNLV can put together the rest of the schedule with some great defensive performances like they did this week, I think the eye test for UNLV increases greatly. I think the loss to Boise State obviously hurts New Mexico. That game seems so much more magnified now because of what's going on, not only in the conference, but like you said, nationally in the group of six. I don't know if it's going to be enough, but if UNLV dominates the rest of the schedule and, you know, you get a couple losses down the stretch from North Texas and the Navy midshipmen, I think UNLV has a chance as well. But it's pretty much anybody's guess. Just like the Mountain West Conference, the American has turned into kind of a slaughterhouse, a horror house down the stretch. So we'll see who survives it basically at this point. And who lifts that conference championship. I think that might be the final thing in terms of weighing out who gets to represent the group of six.
Caleb, let's shift gears to the NFL. Who's your MVP at the moment?
I think Jonathan Taylor has to be the MVP right now. I think he's separated himself, especially with that overtime win, 200-plus yards rushing, all-purpose from the line of scrimmage. He's climbing the ladder in the touchdown race. I think LT's record is 31. If he gets that record, I think that's kind of the standard now for running backs, and maybe the reason Saquon didn't win it last year because he didn't officially break the rushing record. But I think if he gets the record, which he's on track to do, he's the MVP. It's the quarterback award, so I think you got a guy that's kind of trying to break that mold. But the only other guy that I think I would give the nod to is a guy who's basically had a resurgence of his career in L.A., and he's on a heater as well, a quarterback, Sam Bradford. He's doing a great job. He's doing a great job. Four touchdowns and zero interceptions over the last three games consecutively. So I think he's the other guy that I would say is in contention for MVP right now. Those two have kind of separated themselves in terms of their MVP caliber. But I would say Jonathan Taylor. If it wasn't a quarterback award, it should be Taylor for sure.
Not buying Drake May in that mix?
No, I think Drake May and the Patriots are having a great season. I'm just not sold on it. I think in terms of what he's doing, that's actually special. I think he's functioning within the system. But when you look at these other guys, they're having special seasons, and they're doing things that are more memorable. I think Drake May, the only reason what he's doing seems so extravagant is because he's doing it so early in his career in comparison with the other guys in his draft class. This season, he's having a better season. I think that's the Patriots situation is more of a more praise to Vrabel is deserved than the accolades for the individuals involved. So not yet for Drake May. We'll see how the season finishes, though.
Caleb, good job, man. See you on Thursday at the Dan Mullen Radio Show.
All right, guys. Take care. Have a good one.
Every Thursday, Dan Mullen Radio Show over at Parkway Tavern, Flamingo and 215. That's a 7 o'clock start. The Josh Pastner Radio Show is back at 6 on Wednesday. That one is at the Orleans at Bailiwick. The Runner Rebels are back. Just promo. Runner Rebels are back tomorrow night, as they'll be playing a 7 o'clock start. I want to get into the Runner Rebels and what they did over the weekend, and then also a little follow-up on one of the big sportsbook, going down the tubes in my last opportunity this weekend to play with ESPN Bet.
Field & Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
We got a scoreless first quarter. Maybe it's not a surprise, but Green Bay and the Eagles, scoreless in the first, second to start it. I did not bet the game. I don't know if I'm going to bet it in-game. It's a little hard when we're doing the show and you're not really watching what's going on in the game. This weekend, I mentioned to you early in the show that I bet some college football. Well, I was on the road, so I was in Colorado.
Uh-huh.
Every state I go to that has legalized sports betting, I try to open an account or two. and especially ones that are not available here, because I want to try it out. And it's my retirement plan, Jeff. I'm going to build up a lot of money out of this. That's not my retirement plan. But there are times I actually go and I'm like, oh, I don't even know what I have here anymore. I forgot. I'm trying to keep a list, but I forgot. So I go to Colorado, and I'm like, oh, that's right. I have Bet365, which I don't have anywhere else, and I've got ESPN Bet. I mean, these two books don't compare to Boomers here at Ellis Island, but I digress. They don't, actually. ESPN Bet is closing down. So the whole thing with Penn National, it flopped. I don't know if they got pressure from the NFL and the NBA. Like, hey, sever your ties. I don't think that's the reason. But, yeah, I used the ESPN Bet because I was like, my logic is, I'll take a bunch of risk and if I clean out the account, I clean out the account, which is kind of a stupid approach. How about just withdraw the money, right?
What do you? You went my route. That's the way I would do it when I'm in Illinois or New Jersey or Pennsylvania.
It's a free roll.
That's the route I do, 100%.
What do you think happened to ESPN Bet? Not my best.
Oh, boy. I think it had more to do with Penn than it had to do with ESPN. I mean, that's just let's look at the past history of Penn, right? Like the Barstool deal collapsed. And now, this was not long either. This was barely over a year, right? So I think it's on there. I don't know. That would be my guess.
Well, you know what people did? This turned into a whole referendum on how ESPN sucks.
Well,
and they don't know what they're doing. DEI this, and I'm like, I don't know what DEI has to do with sports betting.
It has nothing to do with it. But look, I'll say this more so than anything, where, look, for ESPN, I understood what it was. But the one thing ESPN did do wrong with this is their promotion of their own product was a little bit bizarre. I know people will say, oh, it was too much. I don't think it was enough promotion. I don't think they did enough promotion.
How is the tech not available where they can integrate it into the game, like pop it up on the screen during games?
Or not only that, have it
NBA.
Have it integrated on your smart TVs, which is part of the reason that I'm so aggravated with them right now, that their regular app doesn't work well enough.
You still don't have it.
You
can't watch Monday Night Football at home unless it's on a phone.
I could, but it'll base – A, I need my phone, and B – it just the streaming isn't good enough still. It's crazy. We're in 2025. Like, get your app to work, especially when you're in an elongated thing with 10 million subscribers not having it on YouTube TV right now.
In the bag.
Stick your hand in there.
So, really strong reaction in LA to UCLA moving from the Rose Bowl to SoFi. I really didn't know like how intense this was going to get. They can't move. No one likes the idea, and I just saw. One dude, I don't know if he's retired now, but a guy that I used to work with a little bit at Fox Sports National when I had a short time there, Ralph Urban, very funny guy. But it looks like UCLA would have to buy out of a Rose Bowl deal to the tune of like $80 million. And Ralph says if UCLA can afford $80 million buyout, then the department can certainly afford a $10 million coach and a $30 million roster. Basically saying that's not going to happen. He says this is a shiny object that our clown AD is dangling to save his pathetic job. And that might be the issue in the end. This might actually cost him his job, Martin Jarmon.
Yeah, and it doesn't make any sense either. Like, going off of what Steve Kim was saying to us earlier, just the Rose Bowl is like, that's like the perfect college football venue. I know UCLA's had problems drawing, but the team is stunk. And you mentioned it earlier, like when they were winning, you can get 65,000-70,000 in there.
If they win, people will go. I think it's 12 miles to SoFi, 26 to the Rose Bowl for UCLA students. That's always a challenge to drive the students out. Sure. By the way, I got to mention real quick, UNLV's got a basketball game tomorrow. We're off tomorrow for Veterans Day. We'll have the pregame show starting at 6 o'clock on ESPN Las Vegas. Good performance over the weekend against the defending NIT champ, UT Chattanooga, that plays kind of a grind-out Princeton style. And, you know, if anything's going to be fun about the season, it's Josh Pastner wants to score. They scored 101. I don't know if that means they're going to be a high-powered offense. But he was complaining the other day that they scored 81 in the opener and turned it over 22 times. He's like, we should have scored 110. I'm like, just that alone, they're going to need to win to get the Thomas and Mack full again. But just an attitude of, hey, we're going to run, okay? He's been saying, we're not going to be the dribbling rebels. It's the running rebels. We're going to run. I love to see them putting up that big point total because I think that is going to satisfy people, even if this is a rebuilding year with, like, only 17 or 18 wins. So that was a good thing. Jeff, thank you. John, good job with the setup. James, back in the studio. Thank you very much for sticking around. Big party here. Front Yard, Ellis Island. Come on down. Bet with Boomer. Enjoy all the great giveaways. What a place for Monday night.